IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. My name is Rohan Seth, and I'm joined today with Dr. Shyamali Nayak. Generally, when in the past year, in 2020, when we were dealing with COVID, a large part of the news focused on a vaccine. And the idea was that we've got this pandemic, we'll soon get a vaccine, and the pandemic will be over. At least that's what it sounded like to me, who is the definition of a layperson when it comes to this. And turns out it isn't exactly as simple as it was made out to be, to at least me. And so to answer a bunch of questions about the vaccine, I've got Shyamali here with me, who's of course been, I think I've said on many other podcasts, but is probably the single most important source that you should be looking at to get your information regarding all things corona. So hi, Shyamali.
Hey, Ron. Thanks for the really kind words.
We've got a weird situation here because the vaccination process in India has begun, and we've got two vaccines, and there's sort of been some disturbance in heaven or just Corona Land India, which is there's been a letter from 49 scientists that's talked about the pro vaccine approvals decision. So can you just elaborate on what's happening here?
Sure. So obviously we have been doing this vaccine updates periodically. And in the last update, we spoke about the fact that both Covaxin and Covishield have got approvals, but they have not been able to provide the data that they were supposed to according to the guidelines that were provided earlier last year. So despite the fact, the SEC, the Subject Expert Committee, recommended the approval of these drugs, and the DCGI went ahead and approved these vaccines for deployment in India. Obviously, deployment currently is limited to healthcare workers, frontline workers, and those over a certain age or those with other comorbid vulnerabilities. What has happened subsequently has been backlash from a section of the scientific community, which has openly questioned why such a decision has been made, where is the data available, who are members of the subject expert committee, et cetera, and those questions have not been answered. As a result, there is some understandable confusion and hesitancy about what we really know about the vaccine, and if given a choice, should you get the vaccine? What we do know is that those frontline workers who are getting the vaccine have not been given the choice of Covishield or Covaxin. So you have to take the one that has been allotted to you. So that's what we currently know. In the backdrop of this, there have been a number of claims. So the health ministry has come out and said that people who are questioning the vaccine are being anti-national. They have been labeled as anti-vaxxers. And we have now seen this letter come out from 49 eminent scientists, which again, the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare has also retweeted, saying that this affects the credibility of scientists and people should have trust within the system. Now, the major takeaway point here actually is that no one is questioning the safety of the vaccine, both Covaxin and Covishield. Nobody is doubting that they are safe to take. And when I say safe, it doesn't mean 100% safe. It means safe as compared to other vaccines which have already been in routine use. The Covaxin has been through phase 1 and phase 2. They have published that data which shows that the vaccine is safe. So no one's actually contesting that. But we don't know how effective the vaccine is actually going to be in the general population. And that's the question that people are raising, and that the letter doesn't seem to really answer. The letter gives really good statistics on Covishield, which obviously is the Serum Institute contract manufactured version of the AstraZeneca vaccine, which has been approved elsewhere in the world, and for which extensive phase 3 clinical trial data already exists. Serum Institute was supposed to give bridging data for 600 participants. They have not done that yet. I think the data submitted was only for 100 participants. But there is something there to go on. In either cases, the problem has been of communication. No one questions the vaccine. I think people are questioning the policy process that has led to the approval of these vaccines, which has been muddled. I remember very early on when we wrote the vaccine deployment strategy document at Takshashila, we laid a lot of emphasis on the communication process, and we said that communication is going to be key, public engagement is going to be key. But I want to stress that public engagement is not a substitution for good policy. We still need the evidence on why these vaccines were approved. And this reflects, I mean, the hesitancy, the confusion reflects in the fact that we have had poor turnout of people who have been registered to get the vaccine to actually come and take the vaccine, right? In a number of places, this has been about 50%. Which you think about this vaccine, which for the last year, the people all over the world have been waiting with like bated breath to come and take the vaccine. And now we only have about 50% people turning up. That's really a little paradoxical thing that is happening. And we would have ideally liked, I think, for that data to come out to show that something is efficacious before rolling it out for public use.
Thanks for that. I have one follow-up question to this, which is, okay, I get that communication is a problem here, right? But have there been countries who've handled this communication process perfectly, in the sense that I imagine whenever a new vaccine comes out, as just someone who's not familiar with the science, I would not want to be first in line to take this because I don't know if it's safe or not. So like, communication is going to be key. So have there been countries who've done really well on the communication front and who we can learn from?
So, I mean, I don't think there's any perfect system. But the US FDA, for example, did this really well. What the US has done is that it has made the minutes of the discussion meetings that has approved drugs available. The manufacturers have actually peer-reviewed publications of their phase 3 data, which shows of their clinical trial data, which shows how good the vaccine is, what are the vaccine's limitations. That's something that has also been discussed quite clearly. There are quite clear indications on who should get the vaccine, what are the possible side effects. This was something that both Bharat Biotech and Serum Institute of India were supposed to put out, but they put it out a few days after they actually started rolling out the vaccine, which is another thing that is really not done well. So, for example, Bharat Biotech now has a list of indications on its website. If you have allergies, if you are on blood thinners, you should not be taking this vaccine. But really, all of this information should have been out earlier. It's not novel information. This exists for a lot of other vaccines as well. Because vaccines are made with certain components that people can already have allergies to, this is true for a lot of the vaccines. So, in fact, India's universal immunization program actually has this built-in component where people have to wait for half an hour after getting a vaccine to make sure that there are no allergic reactions, right? These things we know, yet they have not been communicated extremely clearly, which has, again, caused problems. If we had those minutes clearly about who's part of the committee, what decisions were made, what data they had seen, I think it would have added a bit more credibility into the decision. The other thing we also have to be very cognizant about is the fact that both the vaccines have been approved for emergency use. We really don't know what that emergency situation is, because we know that COVID-19 numbers in India have been falling. So whether the decision to go ahead and approve vaccines without adequate information is proportional to the fact that that COVID-19 numbers are falling down, and maybe there are other things we can do. We really don't know what logic has been built into making that decision.
Okay, last point on this emergency use thing, I actually have never considered. So thanks for that. What this tells me basically is that two things matter: this efficacy and transparency. And on I think at least one of those fronts, which is transparency, I think we could have done better, right? As a country, or like as just a communications department for whoever's running the vaccine.
I mean, at one point of time, I think the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare was answering or putting out statements, and they had put this question: are the vaccines being used in India as good as the others? that have been approved around the world. And they said, yes, these are really good vaccines. And we just do not know that. I mean, we do not know what the efficacy of these vaccines are. So it is really difficult for us to judge about how to compare them with other vaccines. So that transparency would have been really helpful. I think if people would have just come out and said that, these are the SEC numbers. This is the data that we currently have. This is the situation in India, and we really need our healthcare workers to get a vaccine. And this is the basis on which we are approving these two vaccines. I think there might would have been a lot more confidence than in this kind of, hey, you have to trust us, we are the best attitude that we are now seeing.
Yeah, no. If I was I don't know, buying something on OLX and someone told me, if I wanted to know how the product was, and if he just said, you have to trust us, you have to trust me, I'm the best, I would have at least some concerns. But moving on from that, let's talk about lessons from other countries, right? And I want to specifically talk about Brazil, because we were having a conversation before the podcast, and you said the tech being used in the CoronaVac trials in Brazil is quite similar to the Bharat Biotech ones that we have. And so tell me a little bit about our lessons from Lower Turnout and Brazil.
Right. So the CoronaVac is a vaccine made by the Chinese manufacturer Sinovac. They were doing trials in Brazil, Indonesia, and Turkey, and they've got differing rates of efficacy. So, for example, I think Indonesia, it was 65%. In Turkey, it was 91%. And in Brazil, it started off, they gave out interim results at 78%. But when their partner institute in Brazil, the Butantan Institute, put out all the information regarding the clinical trials, the efficacy dropped to 50.4%. And these were the headlines that were splashed all across the world that, hey, efficacy is 50.4%. It's barely over the regulatory threshold, which is 50%. So what the FDA and other regulators have put out is that you have to have an efficacy of 50% for the vaccine to be approved. So they're like, oh, this is really low on that. So, you know, should people be taking the Sinovac vaccine? I mean, it's a heads coin toss on whether you'll get immunity or not, right? What people have really not looked at is the trial design for the CoronaVac vaccine as compared to, say, Pfizer or Moderna, which are currently in use, right? A lot of the Western manufacturers have included, say, mild, moderate, and severe categories when they're looking at their vaccine trials, whereas the CoronaVac actually looked at asymptomatic cases, mild, moderate, severe. So they had a lot more categories of people that they were studying. There were a lot more tests that they were doing. So it was a lot more meticulous trial than, say, the Western manufacturers were doing. And as a result, the CoronaVac might seem to have lower overall efficacy. But if you look at the severe and moderate categories, it actually is comparable to, say, a Pfizer or the Moderna. Again, crux of the story is that we need someone who understands the trial design to be making policy and to be communicating why something might be good or bad, why a particular vaccine might work in some people and not in others. So this transparency of the clinical trial results, the clinical trial design, their analysis, and how vaccines can be approved is really an important lesson that India can take. Particularly interesting about the CoronaVac is that it is built on a similar technology platform as the Bharat Biotech's Covaxin. It's also an inactivated vaccine. And it showed really good immunogenicity data in their phase 1, phase 2 trials. So if you go back to the conversations that people were having when we approved Covaxin, was that we have phase 1, phase 2 data. We know that it can create antibodies in healthy adults, right? So it's immunogenic, means that it creates antibodies, so it builds immunity. Interim results from phase 1, phase 2 data for CoronaVac also showed really good immunogenicity in healthy adults. However, it did not translate to protection from asymptomatic cases, right? Which is what the data is now showing. While we say, and these statements have been made by both the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare, by scientists, that if you have immunogenicity data that is equivalent to efficacy data, that might simply be true for the coronavirus. I read a really nice analogy yesterday based on the cricket match that we saw. There were a number of Australian experts who had said after the first test match that India lost, that, hey, this is not going to work. Virat Kohli is leaving, which means that there is no way India is going to win. A lot of expert opinion that we're going to lose 4-0, right? And obviously, the evidence showed otherwise. The evidence says that we won 2-1. So expert opinion is based on a lot of experience and we respect that. But still, if there is no evidence, it is really faulty for us to be putting this on to other people and expecting them to take a vaccine.
That cricket analogy is actually quite something because it gets across the point quite well. So I guess there's a bunch of things we can learn from other countries like we can do in Brazil, right? And something I guess related to communication failure is also happening in Norway. Doc, can you elaborate on what exactly is the situation there?
Yeah, so what we know is that there have been 23 deaths in Norway following vaccination with Pfizer. Again, that's how the headlines reads. We really don't know whether those 23 deaths were linked to the vaccination. These deaths were in people who were of an elder age. Obviously, we are giving the vaccine to a lot of people of over a certain age because they're more vulnerable to the severe form of the disease. But obviously, we know because of their age, it puts them at a risk of dying from a number of other causes as well, not just vaccination. So what we don't know is whether these 23 deaths were actually linked to the vaccine or is this just how things would have normally played out anyways. Again, transparency in the fact that people have died and the fact that the investigation is on is important. This is again something that we did not see very well with the trials in India. We know that severe adverse events were not spoken about. Investigations have been announced much later than when the incident actually occurred. We have had a few deaths also in one of the trials. The lack of transparency really, really hurts the prospects of these vaccines.
That's really interesting because I guess to me, I mean, if there's news reports that people are dying, As a news organization or a newspaper or a TV channel, the responsible thing to do is to just wait and verify if the death has been caused by a vaccine. Because if not, to get clicks, you're severely hampering your country's just ability to get the vaccine in a safer way. So it's truly a bizarre misalignment of incentives. And I just don't know what we can learn from here, apart from the fact that maybe if something similar happens in India or is happening in India, we just be more responsible with our reporting and then the analysis should follow from that. But generally, like, just get our facts straight before we just go on and tweet. So, I don't know. What about the current numbers in India, Doc? How are the vaccines inoculation going so far and what challenges are they facing? Because I know there's some stuff with the app and I'll get to that in a second, but tell me about how the attempt is faring.
Yeah, we have vaccinated, I think, roughly over 4 lakh people so far. We have had about 580 adverse reactions, which might not be so bad. I mean, adverse reactions are expected with giving vaccines. So by themselves, they are not that scary. It's the fact that we do not have a proper monitoring mechanism in place for what happens after then half an hour. So once you get the vaccine, you are monitored for half an hour, then you leave. I really wish we had a stronger post-marketing surveillance in place to make sure that we are catching on as many adverse reactions as we can. The difference in India is obviously the fact that we have a very heterogeneous population in terms of genetics. And therefore, the vaccine might be impacting a certain subpopulation more than the other. And if it is, we really do need that information out as early as possible so that the correct vaccine can be given to an individual. Currently, our policy is to give one vaccine in a district. It's not very people-centric, it's logistic-centric. It's much easier to just send one parcel of, say, Covaxin or Covishield to a certain public health center and primary health center and get it to go out, right? But that might not be the correct approach. And we really need more data to figure out how we can better streamline the vaccination process. The other thing is obviously information. We have new information coming in at all points of time. As I said, Bharat Biotech has recently put out the fact on how many people, on what people with what medical history should not be taking their vaccines. There was also news that people should not drink alcohol for 45 days after taking the vaccine. This was something we saw also with the Russian vaccine Sputnik, when Sputnik came out in December. And a lot of Russian scientists put out a guideline that alcohol seems to deter the effectiveness of the vaccine in creating antibodies. Let's abstain from alcohol. So that's also new information coming in. Again, how much of it has been told to people, how many people really know whether the Bharat Biotech vaccine is still under clinical trial, we really don't know what's happening at the ground level. There have been reports from Bhopal that people have been given the vaccine without them really knowing that they're part of a trial. So those issues continue to exist.
All right. I want to move on from this into like two other topics. So the first one, of course, is our exports to other countries. So the analogy that seems fit to me here is that famous airplane saying that put your mask on safely and then help others. And before the podcast, you were discussing that India has been exporting vaccines to other countries. They're calling it vaccine diplomacy or something. And all that's good. I'd love to export the vaccine to other countries and help out. But the question is that, is doing that okay? I mean, shouldn't we get ourselves checked out first and be completely inoculated before going out helping other countries? What do you think about this, Doc?
Right. So I think from the 20th of January onwards, we're starting exports to Bhutan, Maldives, Bangladesh, Nepal, Myanmar, and Seychelles. And we are still awaiting regulatory clearances from Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, and Mauritius to send the vaccines there as well. I think these are both Covishield and Covaxin, which are going out to other places. I think as a whole, people agree that inoculating healthcare workers, frontline workers, people who are at risk is more important than saying a particular geography has to be completely vaccinated, because these people are risking their own health for saving others or for continued societal operations. So I think there's universal agreement on that. The WHO also came out and said that holding vaccines is going to be a catastrophe for general public health across the world. When it comes to our neighboring countries, at least, obviously it makes sense for us to put their healthcare workers also on a list of priority, because we need these countries to be also be very effective at preventing further spread of the disease. Obviously, this is a communicable disease. It doesn't know borders. It doesn't apply for a visa. So I think this might be a good move. Again, there has to be transparency that is has to be built in into the process on how much vaccines we are sending and whether those vaccines are going to work, right? I mean, I expect that all of these countries have seen the data for Covaxin and Covishield and have approved it under emergency use because of conditions at home. India has to be a leader, not just in terms of manufacturing vaccines and sending them out, but also in terms of the regulatory processes that have been put in place to ensure transparency and approvals. Only then can countries really credibly look at us as a science leader, as a policy leader, and say that India is our neighborhood leader, right? Without that, it's really difficult for countries to have confidence in us. Vaccine diplomacy is really important. We have been doing, we've been helping a lot of these countries through the COVID-19 pandemic by giving paracetamol tablets, diagnostic kits, hydroxychloroquine, and remdesivir, both of which have been shown eventually not to have had a lot of significant impact on COVID-19 recovery. But still, we have been providing medical supplies during the COVID-19 pandemic, but I do believe that India has a larger role to play in the neighborhood than only be a manufacturer.
Hey, that's an excellent point. I have to say, I didn't think about it like that, especially considering the virus doesn't apply for a visa. That's probably a good move. So live and learn. This brings me to the app bit of this vaccine. And I think I'll just briefly explain what's been happening and give my take on it. And then
I'll be the layman, because I don't understand how the app really works or what it does and why. I mean, we have had several dry runs apparently. And now it has just surprisingly failed. This is the app for registering people and for following up with people, right? And I was hearing there were a couple of reports I wrote it on Twitter, so I don't know how the authenticity of this information, that some states were actually now taking down, like writing down the information, and then they will put it up on the app whenever the app becomes functional again.
From my very limited understanding of this, there's a few things that make sense. The first thing is that, listen, if you've got to carry out this massive process of vaccination, you've got to have an app or you've got to have a portal or whatever, right? Having said that, there is a portal, there is an app, it's called Covin, right? And it does a few basic things. It registers beneficiaries, it allocates vaccination centers, it sends text messages with the name of the vaccinator to these beneficiaries and sort of manages live monitoring of vials in cold storage. But all of that sounds really nice. The problem is that its performance has been, its performance has been variable. And there's a few things that's been going wrong, right? And so the first thing is that people are generally facing slow loading speeds. Your first instinct would be to say, well, that's an internet connection problem, right? It's not an app problem. But it's not generally because of network issues. We've had interviews from people. I think there's an article on Economic Times. You can Google it. I don't think I have the link. So we'll see if we can get that in the show notes. But the basic problem is that there is so much load on that portal that loading times are suffering. Right? There's also the whole problem of sending text messages. I say it's a problem because the app's fairly nascent. And when I say it's nascent, I mean the servers are handling the load, but this is expected to happen when you have something that you've just built and you have to ramp it up so exponentially. And so there's been issues of people not receiving text messages. And this basically doesn't tell them the date, when to turn up at the center, what center to turn up at, and who's going to be vaccinating them. And that's all of that's important information, right? This other thing that went wrong is that the app, when it came out, didn't actually factor in this element that not everyone who's been registered may not show up. And like, so this absentee provision is basically absent. And I mean, that's being created, news reports claim, which is all well and fine. And like, part of me wants to say that if you have an app that is going to manage all of this, this is obviously an unprecedented time because generally you don't have apps to deal with pandemics. But if you do, you'll learn some things along the way. You'll pick up some things along the way. I don't think absentee provisions should be one of them because I think if you just spend some time thinking about what features you want to build into an app, I mean, it seems fairly straightforward to me that one of them is absentee provision. So if someone failed to show up to get their vaccine, the app should have the feature to have their slot be replaced by someone else who's down in the pecking order. That seems like a thing you don't need to live and learn. It's something that you should just foresee. It should be an anticipated, unintended consequence. That's basically what's happening. My basic takeaway is that, listen, I think it's this thing is expected to happen when something's scaling up so quickly. So there are errors. And the only thing at this point that any of us can do is to give it time. Because, I mean, these errors, maybe there'll be others, but you'll only be able to fix them when you encounter them. So like from my very limited understanding of this, it's that it's not perfect. And I imagine it's not going to be for some time. But it's the only way to do this in a way that has any sort of efficiency. So I guess the message here is, wait and see if this gets better, because if it doesn't, we don't have a lot of other choice, because the US is using Eventbrite to do this. And I don't think we are ever going to go down that path. So having said that, that's my take. Doc, do you have something to add?
I really don't know. I mean, over the past several months, I've heard this argument that, hey, we run a lot of the other immunization programs without the requirement of an app or identification mechanism. The difference here obviously is that for the other immunization programs, we usually have a lot of stocks in hand and we roll them out, say the polio vaccine. We actually have stocks enough. We know the demand. We bring in all of those stocks and we give it out to people, right? We don't have that case now. We have limited stocks. We have prioritized people, which means that registration and giving out time slots is very important. Again, for a disease like COVID-19, where you don't want a lot of people in a single place at a single time, unlike the images that we saw for PR from the first vaccination that began, we really don't want groups of people together at the vaccination site. So it's really important that people stick to their times and come when they have been registered and asked to do so, right? So I don't really see what other way we do have for people to sign up to get a registration to show that they are in the priority group, then get a vaccination time, and then have their monitor status half an hour after also plugged in, right? So I really don't know what else we can do apart from having some sort of digital intervention to help smoothen that process for it to reach the scale that we needed to reach very quickly. But yeah, I think overall for Digital India, it just means that the government needs to invest a lot more in our digital infrastructure, right, than what we currently have.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that goes without saying, 100%.
Yeah, I just think wish government websites by themselves improve. That this is a signal that, hey, the government needs to do better things.
Maybe that's not a Digital India problem. I think that's a design problem, more or less, because it's just, they're not great websites to look at. And on that very regulatory note, thank you so much, Doc, for doing this podcast and for joining us.
Thanks, Rohit.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week: Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.